Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon or evening, or wherever you might be. Welcome to Personal Transformation. I have Nicola sitting beside me, and welcome today. Today we're going, I have Maria here with me as well, which you can't see here yet, but she'll be joining us shortly. But Maria from is the executive of the Gatehouse. And today we are going to be talking about our conference, which is going on. And it's been an exciting week so far. But I must give you this disclaimer before I go. I'm not here to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. I just want you to be aware of that. Only offering my own experiences, my healing journey from the Gatehouse, as I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And only too happy to share my experiences, my healing journey from day one until now. And here we are at our 10th annual conference. Maria, are you there? Oh, there we are.
I love how she appears. That's so neat, this technology, isn't it? She's like, hey, here I am.
I've become an internet guru.
You are. Far better than me, let me tell you.
Wow, it's been a really exciting week. There's lots of stuff going on and with the Gatehouse, and it's been rather exciting. What can I say? The first day, I'm going to just pass over to Maria. Let's just talk about the first day. And I would love any insights in regards to, well, obviously we were on first, but what about after? It's really what's important. And I'm passing it off to you.
I see how this works. They're like, all right, you talk.
She's been talking all week. Give her a break.
Yeah. I don't mind talking a little bit more. It's all good. Thank you, Stuart, for having me on here and for doing all the great work that you're doing with Nicola to bring awareness to healing and recovery for survivors of childhood sexual abuse, especially through making connections on social media. It's so meaningful. Stuart has more than 10,000 followers on his Twitter account, and just going to put that up on the screen. So if you're not following Stuart on Twitter, check him out at Got to Get Out Of on Twitter there. And Nicola also at Living With Abuse, now on the screen as well. Like I said, becoming a tech guru over here, so I can easily click and show different things. It's so exciting. So the first day, we started off with Transforming Trauma, a Restorative Response. That's what the Gatehouse is, 22 years plus of service to adult survivors and children survivors of childhood sexual abuse and other abuse. For the kids, we do have a safe space that children can come and disclose to police, and we talked a little bit about that. We also talked about a research project that Stefan Hordecki, one of our previous board members, a current volunteer, is going to be facilitating in our groups in the near future, found some meaningful connections around the notion of connection and how important it is for survivors to feel connected in community and build trust with one another, to be able to share their voice, be able to breathe properly, some for the very first time in decades, to be able to share what happened to them, how it affected them, and what they can do moving forward. Of course, we had Nicola on with the yoga session. That was very relaxing. Let me tell you, I did post on there that child pose is one of my favorites. It just feels so neutral and grounding, and an opportunity to refocus the mind and the body. Because often what happens, as you know, for survivors is there's a mind-body disconnect. Absolutely. And some of the workshops have been focusing on that aspect themselves. We talked about with our panel, Sherry, Deb, Catherine, and Andrea. And if you missed any of these panels and you want to check them out, most of them are recorded and available on our YouTube channel. So if you went on YouTube and you type in Gatehouse The, you will find the Gatehouse YouTube channel. They're all there, available free to watch, and share your thoughts and feelings with us on social media. Share the videos, because like I keep saying in these sessions, you just never know who might need them.
Exactly.
Then we went into, we went into our therapy, and then we're in I'll stop at day one, and we can have a chat about the different things that came out. We went into art therapy with Lacey Ford, the founder or co-founder of Full Circle Art Therapy Center, along with Pearl Lee. Lacey led us through a couple of exercises, and we'll share a little bit more and a little bit about what we did. And again, that session is also available on YouTube. So maybe if you guys have some questions, we can start talking about some of the themes that surfaced.
Yeah, well, actually, my big question is here now, which I think very, very important is, deem that we're in a pandemic, and we've had to do things really, really different. So how hard was it for you to put this together this year? considering we're doing everything virtual versus every other year that we've done this, it's always been at one place, one day, and it's always been a great success. But this has been a success so far. But you've had some great obstacles to jump through just to get us to where we are today. So how did this come together for you, putting this together?
So it's a team effort. Yes, I did coordinate and organize most of the sessions, but there are 26, count them, 26 guest speakers, more than six agencies represented across the GTA. We had earlier today, Shamsa Iqbal representing Every Mind, which is formerly the Peel Children's Center, mental health agency that helps children and youth out in Peel region. We had Sheena's Place talking about eating disorder management, destigmatizing stigma around eating disorders, and how there's a link and a correlation, not a causation. There's a big difference. And anyone who's watching is a researcher is like, I hope she didn't say causation. I didn't. I said correlation.
Correlation.
Yeah. Influence of childhood sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. It's not to be sexual abuse in nature. The emotional neglect could lead to an eating disorder development later on in childhood or young adulthood or later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a lot about that and some of the wonderful resources. The Stress Centers of Greater Toronto, Alex and Ian were here talking about suicide prevention and some indicators of suicide ideation and what to do with that. Brad Hutchinson, who is assist trainer, mindfulness expert, he came in and talked about how the assist program is structured and how people can get involved and what are some of the tethers to life. So the things that people talk about that can ground them to life so that we can potentially save a life.
It's a great tool.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So again, team effort. I want to highlight Sherry, if she's listening to this, she's our social media and marketing communications volunteer. She's instrumental in the marketing, social media, content creation, sharing, advertising. She's done a lot of work behind the scenes. I just want to highlight her, highlight Paula and Stephanie and their contribution in getting guest speakers and getting people organized and answering questions about the conference. Our student team that has been working really, really hard behind the scenes, also doing social media content and posting. So that's Brandon, Adam, Jasmine, and I'm missing Karen there. And my mind was like, one more. Karen, thank you for being our wonderful student team this year, helping out with this conference. We couldn't have done it with you. It takes a village, that whole statement.
Yeah.
It does take a village.
Totally does.
And when I looked at the schedule, though, when I said, okay, I organized 14 different presentations and I'm in all of them, I was like, it's a little bit of the zero or nothing approach, which was not super helpful. But at the same time, it's like, it's going to be helpful. It's going to be great. And it was phenomenal. So at first I was like, wow, 14 presentations. I don't know if I could do this. You know, the first thought was catastrophe. And then it's like, no, redirect, refocus. This is phenomenal, amazing. One of the best conferences. I've been involved in 9 of them, and so has Stuart.
Yeah.
So Stuart and I are on the same page there. 9 conferences. So this is our 10th annual. It's been a phenomenal experience thus far. I can tell you one of the big changes this year, not only from going, you know, in person to webinars, was the fact that we have international attendance.
Yeah.
We've had in the past before, but not at this level. So we've had people from Peru, from people from the Republic of Korea, people from India and the United States joining in on the webinars. And, of course, from Canada and different parts of the country.
I recommended another lady from Australia yesterday as well, who's a psychologist who's been on the show before, Lee Tobler. And she's been watching it and retweeting it, et cetera. For people in her community. She's big on parental alienation, obviously,
suicide intervention.
Child trafficking, etc., suicide intervention. She's also got the SEMPI project, which she's actually got in the health system in Canada.
In the schools.
In South Africa. She's got it in several countries throughout the world. And that's another simplified approach to helping children and adults with checking in on how they are. So there's like 5 different elements of that project that she's taken throughout the world. So so well done to Elise, because excellent work. So I have asked Elise to be on the show again soon, so hopefully she'll be okay with that. Yes. So that's another lady who we're quite heavily connected with in the South Pacific. So that'd be neat too.
Beautiful that this kind of work really has gone international, and this is one of the benefits of, you know, working from home and being at home and having to work remote is learning different technologies. So we learned how to use Zoom, we learned how to use Restream, which is what we're using right now. In case somebody's interested in going, how do they do all this stuff? Well, I didn't know that did. Somebody else did. It is a paid subscription, just fair warning, you do have to pay for the service to use Restream. But, and I guess at the beginning of this pandemic, I kept saying, I think I work for Zoom because it was just teaching Zoom and how to use Zoom. We use Zoom webinars for our webinars that took place earlier this week, and all the webinars are being done through Zoom. So that's really amazing that there's somebody else on the other side of the pond doing this kind of work, and it's great to hear these stories. I love seeing all the shares that you guys have on social media and highlighting other people in the UK. The Invisible Boy Project,
Invisible
I believe.
Boy, Invisible Girl.
Yeah.
Danny and Rosie. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, and I know that Stuart spoke about them during our panel discussion, which was great. So we always like to hear those stories of hope and transformation, resiliency, because it gives people hope to move forward from their past. Their past can feel a lot lighter and not hold them back from achieving the life they want to live, from being the best version of themselves. Whatever that looks like for them, not prescribed by anybody else. So it's one of the themes of resiliency that this conference is bringing for people. And accessibility was another something that was on our mind a lot. And I want to give credit to also to Sabra Desai, our board chair, and Arthur Lockhart for taking initiative on this and being the voices on these issues in terms of accessibility. We wanted to make sure that everyone had access to the information that we were sharing. So that, because again, we just never know who's out there who might need it, who might not have the funds to access a session like the one that we just did this afternoon with a registered social worker. We've had a myriad of professionals in the field of mental health and addiction speaking at our conference, and it's all free and accessible for everyone to view. I wanted to highlight the Center for Child Protection as well, because they have a huge amount of resources in terms of information on prevention around educating children and parents around internet use and mitigating the risk of sexual offenders having access to children online and what's the prevalence of offenders. It seems to have increased in terms of like imagery that's out there for people that is of a sexual nature, and child abuse images are increasing was one thing that I learned yesterday. And that's something that's on my mind. So we were talking earlier before we came on here about what are some of the difficult themes that arise for us. So I know, Stuart, if you and Nicola want to share a little bit about any of the feelings that are coming up for you, and I'm glad to share mine as well.
Yeah, that was something that came up to me, and glad you brought that up, actually, because
we were talking about
the prevalence of, due to the lockdown of, obviously, abusers, children being at home more, and that rise in child abuse, the rise in domestic violence, for instance. And I'll be totally honest with you, domestic violence is huge for me too. So I'll be honest with you, that was it the second, not the trafficking one, but the one before that, I felt myself getting quite heavily triggered. So, but I have tools to ground myself with that, so I was okay with it. However, and I'm in a good space. However, I can only imagine how difficult that would be if you're not in a very good space and you were triggered by some of those conversations, because I did find myself quite heavily triggered into some of those experiences for myself when I was listening to that particular one. And yeah, it needs to be out there. I'm not saying that it doesn't, but I did find myself in that space. So can you relate?
Well, I can to a certain degree. Again, I am pretty grounded, and I guess I'm somewhat I'm kind of what's the word I'm trying to say? I've heard it so much, and I've followed it for so many years. I guess I'm desensitized, I guess is the term or the word I'm looking for. And I'm really good at just, I'm hearing it, but I'm not hearing it. I understand, like, especially the numbers, when I saw the numbers and stuff, which is not really uncommon to me, because I follow this sort of stuff, and I'm always reading stuff like this. So in a sense, I just kind of blocked it out. I'm really, really good at doing that. I didn't take it on point because this is really our reality. And frankly, I can't really just, you know, put it out there and ignore it. I mean, I'm ignoring it on a personal level, so it doesn't affect me emotionally. But the fact is, this is what's going on. And these statistics are very, very heavy, and it's kind of scary because, well, you know, if you have children, then you're going to think, oh, my gosh, like, wow, this is just incredible. So I tend to kind of, I'm really good at just pushing it off and not taking it on personally, only because I'm desensitized towards it. And I've heard so much over the years, and don't get me wrong, it still triggers me and it still bothers me. But I won't let it go that far. But I, at the same time, what I'm saying, this stuff needs to be said. And if it's not said on through our conference, then it might as well be said through somebody else, because really people need to know, no, this is not something that's, well, I won't say it's being swept under the carpet. We're putting it out here for you to listen, and rather putting this out here so you can see what statistically what's really going on here. Because in real life, well, we hear about it on through news and media, different outlets, but we really don't get the whole picture, the whole story, as we did in this presentation. Mm-hmm. And as scary as it is, we as people in society need to understand this, what's going on. If it did trigger you or upset you, the people that watched it, well, I apologize, and you know, hopefully you found a way to.
Why are you apologizing?
I don't know. Well, I don't know why. I know. I don't know why I'm apologizing, but I'm thinking that this is really this is what our reality is what I'm getting at, and I won't apologize for that, but this is our reality, and people need to see what's going on. And I don't think people understand or realize, because they're so, you know, innovated in their own lives, which is totally understandable, especially with considering what's going on these days. It's kind of hard to focus. But on the other hand, when you hear statistics like that, well, what about our children?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's really looking out for them? Like, not just at home, but outside the home. So when I hear statistics like this, then I know somebody outside the home is looking at this at a much bigger picture than we are. So I encourage this kind of information to be put out. It should be put out more often. And here I'm shooting, but really it's important, because in order for change to happen, people need to know and understand. And that's what I believe, and also believe that this is how change will happen. And again, we can throw in this connection thing. This is all part of our connection, understanding what's really going on out there. You know, not just in your home, but your neighbor, the street, your family up the street, you know, somebody in another country. This stuff goes on, and people
I agree with that. And because it was in the you know, the last abuse that I incurred was literally back in 2016, so I guess I would feel more realizations from that, just simply because it only stopped in 2016. But I had to physically remove myself from that town in order for it to stop completely, because I was still being stalked, et cetera, et cetera, and financial abuse and everything else that went with that. So I guess that's why it's more prominent in my memory. However, and again, it's the compassion towards these little children that are having to going through this stuff right now, and knowing that those numbers are increasing. And not that it makes me angry personally, but I can relate to that, because it's just like, it's so unnecessary. And the same with domestic violence. I mean, we saw another death the other day in Ottawa, wasn't it?
It was Ottawa.
Which was fairly recent.
Yeah.
Due to the shutdown, maybe that caused that situation to escalate. And see, it's hard to always look at this, oh, you know, the government trying to be safe, da-da-da-da-da. But unfortunately, we know that with isolation, with Christmas, for instance, with Easter, with all those celebrations where the family or, you know, people are at home together more frequently, is when those numbers rise. So if we're in a shutdown situation, it's not a surprise to me that those numbers go up. And it is a concerning trend. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, as soon as we're back open and back to normal life, the better for those children, better for those men and women that are incurring domestic violence, because it's not just women, it's men as well. So I wanted to highlight that. And the prevalence with the little girls, little boys, the sexual abuse, it's obviously going to be more. We know that from the work that we do. So anyway, your insights, Maria, maybe.
But one more thing I want to say before
sorry,
we do that,
go on.
Is that, well, going back to social media again, like I'm going to give an example of someone trying to bring awareness just for this sort of thing we're talking about. Actually, Dave Lito is who I'm thinking of. Because he talked about, if you follow Dave Lino on Twitter, he has purple Christmas. I think I've showed you this to you
purple
as well.
Christmas and purple summer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he brings internationally awareness for childhood abuse of all forms, not just sexual abuse, but covering everything. And I have much respect for this guy for doing so, because he covers all realms. And you know, wish, you know, we could throw these statistics out there just so people can see. But, you know, the only way people are going to see it is if they go to the website. Well, actually, in this case, they'd have to go to the name of that organization in Winnipeg. I'm sorry, Maria. From that lady that was talking,
has the Canadian Center for Child Protection. So
yes,
if you go
thank
to,
you.
Protect children.
And that was the lady that was giving us the statistics.
Yeah.
She was talking about statistics of, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's great we saw that, but really, in the light of things, it really should be plastered all over media, but they don't do that, right?
No.
I mean,
it's
there.
It's kind of hidden.
It's kind of hidden, but
yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of in your face about this, so. When I see and talk about this, it's really, well, it's kind of burning to me in some aspects that it's not in the limelight more, because really, when it comes straight down to it, it's pretty simple. When you think about it, well, our children are our future. You know, even at 5 years old, you know, you may not think, well, you know, you've done this. Well, what's going to happen to their development in the future for growing up and maturing? And what are they going to think about themselves and in regards to their self-worth? How are they going to perceive the future for themselves? How are they going to be in relationships? You know, whether it be in a marriage or raising children themselves,
mm-hmm.
what are the fears they're going to come up with? So I really like the fact that, well, here I am talking about it should be out there on social media, but at the same time, this stuff is more prevalent than it's ever been, and it's also talked about more than it's ever been. So I think for things like that we talked about at the conference, I just wish it was more out there versus you having to go into the website and look for these mm-hmm. statistics. And yes, they're posted once a year or whenever the statistics are done, but really I wish that they were more readily available so that it was in people's faces so that they could see it. And
yeah.
Either you still have a choice whether you can read it or not read it. You know, so that is not taken away from you, you know, but if it's there, you may take the time to read it and realize, well, this is really what's going on in my community. Or in someone else's community, so it's not so lightly pushed under the carpet as that. So, any thoughts on what we're saying here, Maria, or am I just wambling on here as I always do?
He often says that to himself, doesn't he? Am I rambling on?
there's one realization that I had early last year, and it came out of a discussion. Actually, it was late in 2019. We were at a conference, their Transformative Social Change Symposium. And we have Akila Peoples, who is CEO of an organization that does research on health and mental health in Canada. And she mentioned in her presentation that it takes 17 years for research to become reality.
That long.
And people don't realize that. I didn't know. I was in shock. I was like, why would it take so long? I know that the Center for Child Protection has a victimization survey that they have issued, that we as an organization took part in that survey. And they're connecting with survivors across Canada and the U.S., international, to try and find what the needs are for survivors. They're trying to build a network of professionals, survivors, organizations
mm-hmm.
across the country that help so that the information is more easily accessible. They have wonderful resources for parents, identifying the indicators of child abuse or childhood sexual abuse and what to do and how to speak to your kids. They have books on how to, like, trauma-informed language with children and parents. So definitely go to protectchildren.ca, check out their
yes.
website. All the resources, most of them are free. I shouldn't say all. Most of them are free on there. They're downloadable PDFs, easy to read
definitely.
And share. And I know I've shared the one, like a parenting guide for parents, even parenting coping skills. On there as well.
Can
really informative.
Sorry, could I also plug another organization in the UK, which is the Survivors Trust, which was part of the football boys that came out quite a number of years ago now, Steve Walters being one of those people. I would like to plug them as an organization because they've done a ton of work now with adult survivors of the football organizations, encouraging those boys to come out that were abused as kids, and also working with children now that help people to voice what went on in those times. So we're connected with quite a few of the football survivors, one being David Lino, Steve Walters. There's another guy which I can see his face, but I can't think of his name right now. It will come to me. Yeah. But the work that they've done, honestly, absolutely incredible in what they've done to highlight this issue and having gone through the court systems themselves, which can be brutal, as we all know. So kudos to them, because honestly, great work. So I just wanted to just say that too. Anyway, over to you.
I think that's beautiful, Nicola. Thank you for sharing that. Again, it's awesome to highlight all the wonderful work that international victim serving agencies are doing, because again, we're not doing this alone.
Exactly.
The Gatehouse has been doing this for 22 years. Child Protect has been around since 1985. So there's been a lot of movement to help survivors across the country, albeit it feels slow. And like I said, that other stat about research taking a while to become fruition, to become programs, to become strategies, national strategies to helping survivors. We're doing what we can. There are resources in your local community. I don't want to come at it from this fatalist, like there's nothing we can do. No, I want to come at it from this place of positivity and hope. That is the purpose of the conference. It's all about transforming trauma. And I'm just going to put the Gatehouse Twitter on there. If you're not following us on Twitter, check us out, Gatehouse_the, because there is another organization in the U.S. that also is called the Gatehouse, that we are not affiliated with them, and they do some great work with addictions. We have connected with them a few years back because we have the same name. So it's interesting to see that. Again, lots of organizations out there across the country, internationally, doing great work. I had a couple of weeks back the founder of Sota Waka, the Society to Heighten Awareness About Abuse Against Women and Children, Ronki Ikoro in Nigeria. Her organization is doing tremendous work on the ground with children, youth, and women survivors of abuse, including getting them some legal advice and getting them away from abusers and helping them with counseling and housing and all those really important needs that need to be met for survivors. When you spoke about the session yesterday that the Center for Child Protection did, as a parent, there were times where I was a little emotionally overwhelmed by the information. I already knew some of this information, and to have it again reinforced, and also to know that it's on the rise because of, you know, everyone being at home, a lot more accessibility to the internet, kind of went alarm bells. I have had numerous, multiple conversations. Sometimes when I go into my children's rooms and I'm like, I just want to tell you, and they're like, we already know what you're going to say. We already know that, you know, there are weirdos out there on the internet. There are people who are, you know, pedophiles. There are sex offenders. They're trying to allure children. They're trying to have access to children and get children to send them images that are inappropriate. They befriend children online pretending to be kids. So just to be aware of some of those risks, cybertip.ca is the sub-agency or sub-program that the Center for Child Protection has for you to report these kinds of incidents. Cybertip.ca, check that website. If you have experienced anything like that with your child, saying that somebody's trying to befriend them or trying to ask them for pictures or any of that kind of strange kind of behavior, definitely report it, because you just never know, again, who you might be saving. You know, your child might come to you and tell you that someone is trying to befriend them in that way, but maybe another child won't.
Exactly.
And then they become victims, and then their images are out there, and it's really hard to get the images pulled down. And I know there's some stuff going on in the States. I know Ashton Kutcher is speaking out about this. There's some legislation that's going to be passed where it makes it more difficult for pornography sites and other kinds of sites to take down those kind of images. So that concerns me. I haven't heard of that kind of legislation here in Canada, and if anybody knows, please share in the comments and we'll try and respond.
I'm glad you brought that subject up, actually, because, again, someone in the UK who shares this stuff on social media and does similar work to us recently shared online through Twitter that he is proactive of checking his son's telephone, who's about 8 or 10, I'm not exactly sure. And he actually did a screenshot of these adults actually asking his 8 or 10-year-old son to be friends with them. So he made it aware for everyone that, look, this is what's happening. There was like three or four adults that had actually contacted his son within the last week or 10 days or whatever, asking to be friends with him. So, and this is on these regular sites, and I can't remember what it was, whether it was Snapchat or whether it was something else. I can't remember exactly what sites it was. However, there were several different sites that he'd mentioned, and he does check his son's phone on a regular basis just to make sure there are no adults asking to be friends with children of this of that age. And also being aware that, you know, these online predators can also be posing as children. So I just wanted to just highlight what can happen in that space. And also the police thing yesterday was highlighting that too, with that the later session at 3 o'clock. So that was interesting to see it from the police point of view, and also, like you say, the other lady that was on there. I find that quite interesting too. Anyway.
For sure. Thanks for sharing, Nicola. Yeah, that was Constable Abdella from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Yeah.
And Cynthia Bland, the founder and CEO of Voice Sound out in Ottawa, and her agency helps victims of human trafficking from a comprehensive multidimensional strategy, from seeking housing to legal support to food resources to counseling, therapy, and financial support as well. So there's really great, like I said, programs happening across the country and really good collaborative partnerships between police and agencies working on the ground to help people who have been trafficked. One of the strategies that Cynthia highlighted in her presentation yesterday was this boyfriend or Romeo and Juliet kind of situation where men and or women lure by pretending and engaging, or not pretending, but actually initiating a relationship of a romantic nature with them, and then subsequently trafficking that person to other people. And the other notion that came out of that one for me was the movement aspect of that and how victims are often moved to keep, you know, the authorities at bay, really. So there's really good collaboration between RCMP and other agencies on the ground. We mentioned the Ottawa Human Trafficking Police Unit in that presentation, and that one is available on our social media channels. And if you haven't gotten a chance to go check out voicesound.ca is their website for their resources and programming out in Ottawa. I know they're doing some programs. We're going to be talking to Lucy tomorrow, who's the coordinator of Strength Found, and it's a new program that they started. And part of the session tomorrow will be delivered in French.
I'm looking forward to that presentation.
People speak French, join in. Mine's a little rusty, you got to admit. So I will be part of the session, but I will be speaking in English only. And if anybody needs Portuguese translation, I can do that. French is a little rusty, you got to admit that. I will not pretend to know a lot of French. I know some. So Lucy's going to be talking about Strength Found, which is a new program. We collaborated on training aspects of this program. It is modeled after the Gatehouse program for survivors, and they're adding some of their own components into it, essentially talking about boundaries, trust building, the inner child. A lot of the components that are in our program will be integrated into their program, and they're making it their own because it can also be adapted for survivors of human trafficking. So really excited about that. I know the program started in September. I'm really excited to hear what she has to say about the strengths of the program and what the successes have been thus far. And tomorrow, again, it's all about closing the sessions with gratitude, peace, and meditation. So we have Nicola back at 2 o'clock doing some more yoga with us so we can all feel relaxed. And then there's a meditation session just before that at 1 o'clock with Brad Hutchinson. StepIntoTheCreative.com is his website. And he is the previous executive director of the Gatehouse. He's also a motivational speaker, survivor of cancer, and he is a really wonderful overall human being. I love spending time with Brad. We did our four-week midday mindfulness session, so if you haven't seen those yet, go check those out on our YouTube channel. And our YouTube name is actually the same as what's appearing on your screen, minus the underscore part. So just Gatehouse, if you type that in on YouTube, you'll find us there.
Thank you for saying that. And you know, I'm really happy about this organization in Ottawa. And it's funny, we were talking about that earlier, a while back. And if our conference had taken place, we would have been in Ottawa this year to see that. But that didn't happen. But kudos for them for doing this and starting this program. First, I want to point out, too, I do originate from Ottawa to begin with. And back in my day when I was there, they didn't have anything like this. So it's really good to see that. And I'm looking forward to see them grow. And from my experience, and I can't really say because I don't know, but I imagine there's a lot of people need help there. And I'm looking forward to see that go into fruition. And, you know, it's the right time to do this. And I'm really excited for them. So I'm really looking forward to hearing their presentation tomorrow as well. Now I'm going to go off now and back a little bit. We were talking about art therapy. Any insights on the art therapy? I mean, I myself have taken two of the programs of the art therapy, and it has helped me out immensely. I'm no artist, to say the least, in any aspect, but that's not what it's about. It's about looking, you know, deep inside, and if it means doing it through a crayon or through a water a paintbrush to find those thoughts and feelings, then to me, that helped me. So to me, I would encourage that to anybody who's trying to.
It also involves journaling as well.
Yeah,
right?
Journaling too.
So that would involve a more CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy type work as well.
So it was very, very helpful for me is what I'm getting at. And from other people that I've talked to that have taken this program, or actually they have a couple, it was very, very helpful for them as well, for the insight that I've heard, rather the responses that I've gotten back from them as well. So all in all is when I promote it, I always say, well, it helped me with my deep-seated anger and guilt, which I knew was always there. I mean, I still struggle with that, but nothing like it was. I know that the first time I went to the art therapy program, it just changed things for me quite a bit, because I just couldn't say it, and journaling and painting as I was doing helped me bring it out to whatever degree that it did.
I can relate, because I am an art therapy life coach, so I can totally relate to the art, and I have used that myself as part of my healing too, so it definitely helps. Journaling, the whole shebang, it's just a really good way of processing, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
So any thoughts on that, Maria?
Sure, and I've also added my own Twitter handle on there if anybody wants to connect on Twitter. It's Barcel Mar online. In terms of art therapy, so that when Lacey started the program 4 years ago, 4+ years now, it's been quite an awesome journey together as two organizations collaborating to bring, again, accessible healing for survivors. Different modalities work for different people. And one of the things that we heard in the session earlier today was that not one person has the same response to trauma. So keep that in mind. Not the way that you react, the way that Nicola reacts, the way that I react are going to be completely different, even though we might be exposed to the exact same situation. Same thing for therapy and therapeutic intervention. Some people need a coach, some people need a therapist, some people need group and vice versa, or a collection of those interventions to help them move forward. Whatever works for you, works for you. So let's maybe even focus a little bit on that thought in itself. And you are worthy of seeking support, and there's so many resources out there available for people. Art therapy for me, when I started doing the arts, this statement came to mind. The art therapy gives people the vocabulary that they have may not yet found to express their trauma and how it impacted them. So it gives people vocabulary. It was an interesting thought when this came to me, because I actually said it at one of their fundraisers, Art for Heart, that Full Circle hosts. It gives people the words to express themselves, especially if they haven't had any support in the therapeutic nature. Maybe they haven't told their story, they haven't done journaling or any of those things. So the art helps to access parts of the unconscious mind that brings the story forward as well for people. So if you don't have to be an artist to take part in art therapy. It's not even about the art. It's about the process of expressing yourself with different materials and different mediums. And I know Lacey does a phenomenal job at this, at this session. We did one, it's kind of abstract when you think about it, our breath, right? We all breathe as human beings, but we took our breath. She had us actually take either pencil, pen, crayon, doesn't really matter, some paper, and draw what our breath feels and looks like and note as it's going up or going down. Are we shallow breathers? Are we deeply breathing? Are we not breathing? Are we holding in our breath? And how it came out in terms of the drawing. It wasn't analyzed in the session. It was just to look at it and see how that makes you feel, to see your breath on paper. Mine ended up being four or five different disconnected strands because I found myself breathing in a myriad of different ways and having all the thoughts. So it was a lot in my head, and I'm like, okay, no, this is a body experience, right? The other activity that she did that was so cool was she had us draw this balloon. And one of the balloons, the first balloon, and it was just like an outline of a balloon, but she said it can be any shape. And in that balloon, she had us just draw out kind of like whatever feelings or sensations were surfacing in the moment for us. So how we feel right now. And then go on to another balloon and draw how we want to feel or what we want our life to look like kind of thing. And then she did that piece. And it was interesting, like some of the way the balloons looked and stuff. I was like, this is, at first, you know, you go to automatic. I went to the automatic self-judgment. This is weird. This looks weird. And it's like, why am I thinking my balloons look weird? They're just balloons. There's no grade for this one. Yes, stop it. Right? And my mind went to that analytical brain and said, okay, so should I put this in here? What should I, make anxiety look prettier? Because, you know, should I make stress look a little bit better? Should I draw it a different way? And it's like, art therapy allows you to get out of that mindset of a logical functioning brain and into this very emotional side of things, which often for survivors of abuse and trauma, the emotions and the thoughts are kind of disconnected, or the awareness between the linkages of those two are disconnected. So it was interesting to see that come up in the surface through that session for me.
Definitely. I can relate to your experience because with the trauma confidence, I'll get it out in a minute. The trauma conference that was actually in person last year, I attended one of Lacey's sessions, and she got us to draw a circle, and in different sections of that circle, we drew different areas of our life. And again, similar to what you are saying with the cognition of where we could improve certain areas of our life, or where we're peaceful or happy with certain areas of our life. And that was interesting too. And I know for myself, like going back to what you were saying, I'm not an artist. I remember when I took art as part of my high school work, and at the time I would get stuck as I'd like do certain drawing and be okay with it, and then I'd get stuck and I couldn't finish the drawing. But I found myself, as I grew through my journey, I found myself telling myself some days, oh, I'm not very good at this. However, on the days when I told myself, I can draw a squirrel, I can draw this robin, what came out on the paper actually looked like a squirrel or a robin. However, when I told myself I couldn't do it, it was totally different. So it just goes to show that if we say that positive affirmation in our head, I can do this, for me anyway, it actually showed on the paper that I could do it. Whereas if I told myself mentally, oh, I'm rubbish at this, it showed on the paper. And it just goes to show that positive mindset really did help me process when I was doing that drawing. So it's interesting to actually see that as proof down on that piece of paper.
And I love what you're saying, because I did the exact same thing. And I can draw a stick raccoon, a stick cow, I can draw anything stick-like, no problem whatsoever. It looks marvelous. But what I got out of it psychologically was even better. And I love how you describe it, because, you know, I never would be able to go in and find those thoughts and feelings if I hadn't done like Maria was just describing. You know, like, yes, it looks like a stick, but what did I get out of it? You know, that deep-seated anger, my guilt, my trust, those things, you know, like I talked about it, but how does it really reflect on how I'm feeling, and how does it, you know, how I'm feeling, how does it affect me?
Mm-hmm.
How does it affect others? You know, on how I react to other people, just for having those feelings deep inside, right? So, you know, I love what you're saying, and I just had to sort of stick in there. I just had to. I just, you know.
Mm. Has a warped sense of humor. I can relate to that one too.
We all start somewhere in terms of like drawing and painting and things of the sort, right? But none of us is born knowing. So.
Exactly.
So
Leonardo da Vinci, yeah. I tell you, he's got nothing on me, man. I could draw a stick like he never would have seen. I tell you, but never.
Well, and that's the thing too, right? I mean, when you like look at yourself and I look at you and like, you know, you're a pretty good runner and you're good at baseball, da, 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 da. You didn't get there by being good at it to start, did you?
That's
and
good.
So when I get in that space where I maybe start to beat myself up because I'm not good at something, I start to say to myself, hey, Nicola, what are you doing? You haven't had any experience in this. So it's going to take time for me to get better at this thing, right? So, and I allow myself the patience and the compassion that, hey, I'm not going to be good at this right away because I have hardly any experience in it. So I'm going to get rid of that, I should be better at this,
mm-hmm.
or whatever comes up for me, because what difference does it make? As long as you're having fun, hey,
and I'm glad
not hurting anyone, what difference does it make?
I'm really glad you said that because there was no should in that. I looked at it just and as I described. It was all about what I had up here. Not about what I had in my fingertips, is well, obviously other than journaling, but it was about what I got out up here. And
yeah.
Folks, if you're going to try this, I really recommend you go in with that open mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can draw a perfect stick man just like I can, but it's not about the stick man. It's about what's up here and in here. And it was a great help for me. And I've heard this from other people with the same struggle. And as Maria just talked about it here a moment ago, you know, sometimes we can't put words to what we're actually thinking and feeling. So if it means drawing like I'm talking about, then I say all the power to you. And that's just another form of, you know, of your journey or your healing journey. It's not about Picasso or any of the others. It's just about finding what you're thinking and feeling. I know we're getting on here with time, and it's amazing how this time has gone by, but I would like to talk a little bit more. Thank you, Maria. More now about the presentation with Brad about and the suicide awareness. I know we had a lot of people watching that, and suicide prevention is a big thing. And I would love to hear your thoughts on how that went and anything else.
Sorry, Maria, before you start, could I just highlight the numbers? The biggest numbers in Canada right now for suicide numbers are our youth. And that's between the ages of 15, I believe.
Yes.
And 27.
Oh, I thought it was 22.
I think it's 27.
Okay.
However, I just wanted to highlight that those numbers are huge. So I know for me it's a work in progress. I would like to eventually work something out and have the time to develop a program where we actually go into the middle schools, the high schools, the colleges, where we could maybe help with the mental health and suicide prevention in that particular area, because that's something that's pretty close to my heart, especially knowing that that's where the highest prevailing numbers are. So anyway, over to you. Sorry.
I don't have all the answers to that. I don't have all the answers.
No, I know.
Okay, so let's talk about the first stat that you talked about. So there's an increase in suicidality and suicide risk for youth right now. Why do you think that is? We're all at home. There's less socialization going on. We are social creatures. Children, especially teenagers, are in this developmental phase of wanting to be accepted by their peers. They're starting to distance from the parent relationship, and their peer structure becomes more important in their brains and in their minds and in their development. So now that's being taken away because we're in the middle of a pandemic. So I'm not surprised these numbers are going up in terms of suicide ideation and suicidality for youth, and also others who are survivors of trauma, people who have other pre-existing mental health conditions. There are so many contributing factors to suicidality or thoughts of suicide. Mm-hmm. We talked about yesterday about poverty being one, abuse being another, income levels. So there's so many, there's not one, you know, linear process of, okay, you have this, this, and this, you're going to eventually hurt yourself kind of thing. Self-harm seems to also be on the rise. And one of the things to watch out for with kids is a lot of like isolating behavior, so they don't want to talk to you. But again, it could be the teenage brain functioning, right? So it's always good as a parent to have conversations with your kids and have other caregivers also, you know, interact with your kids. Like I'm very fortunate to have my sister Paula, who lives, we live together, right? So we co-parent the kids together, and they're both teenagers. So having conversations and saying hello and saying, hey, would you like a hug? You know, just to check in with them has been helpful for our situation here in my own personal home. But looking at that, and there's some really great resources on suicide prevention through the Canadian Center for Mental Health and Addiction, so CAMH. Check out their website. It should be CAMH.ca, CAMH.ca. And then the Canadian Mental Health Association of Ontario and across Canada also have some really good downloadable content. Child Protection, the Center for Child Protection has some really great content again, protectchildren.ca. So check out those resources. Mm-hmm. They'll have more information than what I'm giving out here. Watch the video with Alex and Ian, because they talk a lot in depth about those risks, factors, and indicators. One of the things that Brad said yesterday that really stuck out to me was listening to the story and letting that story come up for the person.
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the things that maybe a lot of practitioners out there might be rushing, maybe because of their own discomfort, for a myriad of other reasons. But the story is fundamental, and it's part of our program.
Absolutely.
To listen to the survivor story and empathize, not understand, but empathize and know that they are in a safe place to share their story.
Yeah.
So it can be really difficult for a parent to sit there and listen to their teenager telling them, Mom, yesterday I cut myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday I drank.
Yeah.
And I want to hurt myself. I want to die. Like, these are not stories or things that you want to hear from your kid. And at the same time, that child telling you those things are indicators to get them some support, get them some help, and validate them. And instead of saying, you know, let's not talk about this, to say, thank you for telling me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really tend to agree with you. I've had a lot of experience in this as well over the years, and and a lot of people who think they can intervene and know have the right language don't always have the right language.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky. I've had a lot of good trainers, and I, you know, and I'm very empathetic myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to. I don't know. I'm not trying to twist it in any way, but the idea of listening is a really, really hard skill for a lot of people. And what really makes it hard too, and I'm going to reflect on what Maria just said, was that if it's a family member, it really, really makes it hard, because that makes it really, really personal. And sometimes you can't always be objective. Right away, you're going to say, well, you shouldn't think that way. I mean, you're my kid, for heaven's sakes, right? So what's going on? But again, it's the language, and that's what I like about this. Well, I mean, this CIS program is good too, but the SIMPI program too also talks about that as well, you know, about language, you know, and about having really, really good listening skills, and, you know, being able to sit there and listen to the story. And Brad is right on the money on that one, right on the money on that one. You know, being able to sit there and not draw judgment and jump to conclusions right away. The idea is to sit there, listen to the story. And while listening to your story, you know, this is the key part about this, and this is what's so important, is when we're listening to the story, hear what's going on, you know, validating what they're saying, and trying to hear strength in what they're trying to hear strength in their story at the same time, and hoping you can pass that back onto them and remind them of their strength, and hopefully you can do an intervention and hopefully direct them in the right spot.
The statement that comes to me are the words that, as a survivor, I would have liked to have heard was, I believe you.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, the parents can't deal with the trauma because they take it on as a trauma themselves. And in therapist terms, we call that vicarious traumas. It's sometimes hard for the parent to step back from it, knowing that they are so close to that child or whoever they're telling may take it on as a trauma themselves. So being aware of that, that sometimes, and you might have an excellent relationship with your parents or child or whatever, whoever it is that's sharing with you these experiences. However, if you're too close to the wire, then you may also take that on as a trauma yourself. So I know for me, having seen my son go through trauma, that was really difficult to deal with. So being able to step back from it, a parent may not always be able to do that because they may have issues that they've dealt with themselves, which bring up stuff for them, right? So even though there's some amazing parents out there, I'm not judging anyone at all because we are all where we are. However, sometimes when you share it with a parent, may not always be the best person to deal with it. And sometimes speaking to someone in privacy, either like Kids Helpline, for instance, I've done their 6-week training for Kids Help Phone, and that's throughout Canada. Sometimes speaking to someone anonymously over the telephone can help if you're not comfortable speaking to a parent. So I would encourage you, if you don't feel like you have a voice or you don't feel like you're going to be believed or whatever is coming up for you, just maybe call one of those numbers and reach out, because honestly, you are worthy. We're all worthy. And you know what? Someone out there will miss you if you decide to take the option and, you know, do harm to yourself. So, you know, I just wanted to kind of share that before I go off on a rant.
The idea, the thing Nicola is trying to say, yes, is that if being a parent, and I'm a parent as well, we're all parents, mm-hmm, here, I would say, and maybe this was said already, but if you're a parent and being that close proximity as you are, if you feel that you can't handle it, I would definitely reach out. That's all, yeah, I'm trying to say. You know, because sometimes we can jump into waters that are very, very deep, and being personal as that, sometimes, mm-hmm, it's over our heads.
Yeah.
So never be afraid to reach out.
Yeah, like you say, sometimes if we don't have the tools to deal with it ourselves, there's always other options. So to reach out, like you say, to resources in the community. And if someone doesn't know those resources, there's always someone that does. Yeah. So I would always refer someone to the Gatehouse, and we can give you some resources to help you, etc.
And suicide being still a taboo topic, just like childhood abuse, is getting, well, it's more in the limelight now, if I can use that terminology, not a great choice of words, but it's out there more now. People are talking about it more. So what we're seeing here now is, and with the Gatehouse, with the presentation that was done yesterday, hopefully it helped you bring this into more into light, realizing that you're not alone and there is help out there.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Stuart, for highlighting that. There's a couple of things I just wanted to end off my part today here with. If you haven't signed the petition yet, this speaks to the point of having education about prevention and suicide awareness too in schools. Lovren's Law is being petitioned to our Ontario government here by Charmaine Lovren, who is the initiator of this initiative. And it will bring forth, so it's going through different stages of trying to get it into as a bill or legislation in our province. And right now they're looking for signatures. So you can sign the petition. I will post.
Yeah, can you post that, please?
Yeah, I will post comments on our social media pages today with a link to sign the petition. This would legislate our education system to have a week-long an awareness and prevention week about abuse, bullying awareness as well, mm-hmm, and suicide prevention would be part of that discussion. So
absolutely,
it kind of like fits in with, definitely fits in with what we're talking about. And so just people, please sign that petition, share the petition on your social pages. It has to be citizens of Ontario. That's the one limitation, that sign the petition. It's easily signable online.
Mm-hmm.
I know Charmaine got another 200 signatures the other day. So it is,
awesome.
There is movement. Yeah, there is movement. And we definitely need support with that. So all you
That's
do
great.
Is sign a petition and get your MP to raise awareness about this and the prevalence of childhood abuse and what's going on, so that we can get,
mm-hmm,
more services to children that need them and more services to families that need the support in the aftermath of abuse, because
yeah,
it's not just taking the child out of that family, that's one aspect of it. And also, how do we help those families so that they're not repeating the behavior? We have to interrupt these cycles of behavior, or else, it's not productive. It's a retributive way of being, and we want to be a restorative way of being to get help for everyone. And holding offenders accountable.
Okay. And Charmaine was on the survivors panel, which was on the other day, and you will find other survivors on there as well, where they're sharing their stories. And I would
Daniela
really
Daniela was
on there as well. There's some other people in there from that gay house as well. So I would really recommend you go and listen to that, listen to their stories. And another way of acknowledging that we're not alone. Mm-hmm. And they offer great insight in their own healing experiences, so I would really recommend you go there.
Yeah.
I know we're getting close to our time, but and we didn't even cover all what I wanted to cover. There's just no way we could do that, so we'll have to leave it for another day. But I would like to ask Maria for any last minute thoughts, because I know you still have the evening to go, so I don't want to keep you here really any longer. So any last thoughts, and we can always come back and do this again, because the conference is not over. We still have another day, and maybe with the people filling out the surveys, maybe you can go back with some insights or thoughts on how they thought it was, and just go from there.
Thank you so much, Stuart. And I'm just going to put back our gatehouse videos, please, on your social media channels. The more awareness we can generate that way, the better the message gets out there for people.
Absolutely.
Who may need our services and may need to be part of gatehouse programs, because we just never know who we're impacting with words. So it's really great. Please feel free to leave comments. Those are always welcome. And I keep saying that in the webinars, we need to spread awareness and other positive messages out there.
Yeah.
It really impacts people in very negative ways.
Mm-hmm.
It is also, like Brene Brown says, the shame and processing it with vulnerability, the way that we do at the gatehouse, is also the birthplace of other things like creativity. This show came out of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
The show is called Personal Transformation,
right,
for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart found his voice and wants to give back now to other survivors out there. Nicola found her voice. I found my voice. And we're giving back to other
Absolutely.
People out there to try and help others with our words, our story, our example. And we're not the only example. There are millions of us out there.
Mm-hmm.
You are not alone, and you are worthy. If you're watching this, please share the video on your social media feeds. I wanted to thank the Department of Justice. We couldn't have put this event on the way that we did this year with all the technology in the background and all the guest speakers that we did without the support of the Department of Justice Canada. The grant, we were awarded a grant to as a sponsor of this event, so the Victims Fund. And you can find out more information at justice.gc.ca. And this is National Victims and Survivors of Crime Week, actually. So November 22nd to the 28th is this whole week. There are many agencies across Canada hosting events. I wouldn't say as extensive as ours, 14 sessions in one week. I think, like I said, we overachieved, but it was really great.
Awesome.
I always got to plug the gatehouse in there because we're awesome. And all the volunteers, I want to thank each and every single volunteer that helps us continue the work online. We do use Zoom meetings.
Absolutely.
If you are a survivor over the age of 18, non-sexual offending behaviors, check out thegatehouse.org. There's lots of great information there. Contact Stephanie at thegatehouse.org to schedule an intake. I wanted to thank our community partners, so the agencies that were represented at the conference, Sheena's Place, that gave the wonderful presentation on eating disorder management. Voice
great.
Sound in Ottawa, our partner agency. They help victims of human trafficking and work closely with the Ottawa Police Human Trafficking Unit. Canadian Centre for Child Protection, again, they offer a myriad of resources for parents and caregivers on preventing child exploitation online. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who did the presentation on some of the indicators and risk factors for human trafficking. The Distress Centre of Greater Toronto, that did the presentation on suicide indicators and prevention. Full Circle Art Therapy Center, that did the art therapy session with us. Again, every MIND representative, Shamsa Iqbal, supervisor, clinical supervisor out there in Peel, helping children and families recover in the aftermath of trauma. So many great speakers this year, so many people, 26 people again, that made all these presentations happen. And I'm super grateful to everyone that was involved. And again, highlighting Sherry, if you're listening, hello, Sherry, you're awesome. She loves thank you. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Sherry.
Like, stop thanking me already. No, I will continue to thank you. Now I publicly thank you on social media. I love Sherry. Also, we have one comment that I just wanted to touch on real quick, because I know the person who commented on our Facebook, and they mentioned that kids under 16 should not have cell phones with access to social media. Way too invasive. I agree with that comment.
So do I.
However, it's very difficult in this day and age to keep kids off the internet. And, you know, most parents work a lot of hours, pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Young teens, 12-year-olds, walking home already with their siblings alone and being at home alone and stuff. Having a cell phone just gives parents that extra layer of feeling safe, like the kids have a phone, I can quickly call them, and vice versa, right? So it's not feasible to keep the kids off the phones before the age of 16. I'd say that's nearly impossible. And if any parent has done that, feel free to share the strategies that kept kids off of cell phones. I would love to know, because men have had one since they were about 10 years old each. Just again, that walking home and me connecting with them after school kind of thing. So that's my experience. And it, like I said, it's really hard to keep them off. But there are protocols, there are strategies, there are communication that you can have with your child to give them an extra level of knowledge, and that knowledge is power was mentioned in one of our works today. Give them that extra level of knowledge so that they can recognize when there's someone that's saying something like, oh, would you like to share this kind of photo, or come online but don't tell your parents, or things of the sort that feel a little bit strange and weird. Definitely are weird. Talk to your parents, talk to someone that you trust, a teacher, a police officer, whoever it is in your trust network. I want to thank Stuart and Nicola for putting this on today. It was really great. I am done with online meetings until later on when we have our facilitator debrief. And tomorrow we will be back at 11 a.m. again with Lucy Bruno, program coordinator, or program manager, I should say, at Voice Sound of the Strength Sound programs. I'm looking forward to seeing Lucy tomorrow.
And in French and in English, both languages, both official languages in Canada. Maria, I can't thank you enough. Again, more thank yous all around, right? Thank you. I can't thank you enough. And the Gatehouse for putting this on this week. Fantastic. Great, great, great information.
Yeah.
Helped a lot of people. And the great thing about it is we've got connection.
Absolutely.
We have
connection.
Enormous
global.
Sense of connection, global connection. And the only way we're going to change things, folks, is to talk about it to the level we are. So thank you, Maria. Thank you, Gatehouse. Thank you, Nicola.
Thank you.
And
if anyone wants to check in and register for the 2 p.m. session for yoga, it is trauma-informed. So that means there are differences to what you would find in a regular yoga studio if some of those yoga teachers are not trauma-informed or trauma-aware. So again, child's pose, for instance, Maria was saying how she likes that so much, and that doesn't surprise me, because you know what? When you're in child's pose, it actually encourages the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the opposite to fight and flight. So that means the body goes into relaxation because you're relaxing the diaphragm. So if anyone wants to register, please go to thegatehouse.org and register for that session at 2 o'clock. And then we'll be finishing off at what time, Maria?
We will be done at 3 tomorrow. I was going to say one last thing. Please make a donation to the Gatehouse if you can.
Sure.
You can spare $5 a month. Become a monthly donor. We need support. We are not a government-funded agency. And I want to highlight, yesterday we had a donation of $100
from
an anonymous donor, so that's really great. Please keep sharing the messages and donate online. You can go to thegatehouse.org to donate. You can find us on Canada Helps as well. If you type in the Gatehouse, it'll come up as our long name, the Gatehouse Child Abuse Investigation and Support Site. But that is us on there, where there's only two charities with the name Gatehouse. One is a Montessori school and the other one is us.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Maria, have a great evening and thank you for your time.
Take care, everybody. Self care.
Shut that down. There we go. And that's it.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.